you for the opportunity again. We have to open your word and look and see what you have to say. I pray that your spirit will speak to our hearts and that this weekend will be a benchmark for these dads and daughters, that they will always look to a time where they made the special effort just to get together and be together and affirm it, their love for one another. We look forward to seeing how you'll use them in the years to come. In Jesus' name, amen. You know, he's talking about a lot of young ladies that don't have what some of you girls have, where you have a dad that's actually interested in you. And you probably have friends that are that way. It's okay to invite them probably over to your house. Let them see how your mom and dad act. Let them see that. That's very good sometimes, because they don't have that in their life. And it's happened many, many times with my wife and I where people have come over and they've told us they've just never seen a couple that is committed to each other and that acts like you act. And it wasn't a compliment or anything to them. It's confusing to them in a way because they haven't seen it. And they're thrilled by it, but they haven't seen it. And sometimes that's our problem. They haven't seen it. Our friends haven't seen it. We need to help them see that there's another way to live. You know, it's not like they see on TV all the time, and it's not despair, and it's not. There are actually people who love each other. There are actually dads who love their daughters. They are. They actually are. And they need to know that. And again, there may be mistakes in our family or relational problems, whatever. I understand that. But what we are going to be committed to as men, hopefully, is straightening those out and showing people how to do it right, even in bad circumstances, how to do it right. I mean, we can do that. And there's some young ladies whose dads have abandoned them. A young lady came to me at Father's Day this last year, and she just didn't look good. And I mean, she looks sad. And I said, "So what's up?" And she just blurted out, "I just wish I knew who my father was." Oh, yeah. And I'd known this girl for a very long time, and I didn't know that was a problem. And she sat, and we had a great discussion, and I invited her. I said, "Well, why don't you just, you know, allow me to help you? Why don't you come into Linda my life a little bit and let us help you? And let us take some of that for you. I would love to be the old man that can tell you things from an old man's perspective. And we do care about you." She says, "I know you do. It's just Father saying, I just don't know who my father is." I understand. And you know, that's painful, and I can't do anything about that. But, you know, it's really great if we can be sensitive to the fact that people are out there that need an example. They need an example of a daughter who loves their dad. They need an example of a dad who loves their daughter. They need those two things. So let's be the example for them. Let's give them a target to look at. And you'll see, young ladies will be rescued. Not only that, other dads get rescued. It's interesting. You heard my daughter say something that was probably more important to me than other things. She appreciated my relationship with my wife. Why does she do that? Well, she's a social worker, and she deals with this stuff every day. And what does she see? Broken homes, unattached dads. She sees it, and she sees the ramifications of it. And she's going, "I am so thankful I didn't have that." See, sometimes you don't know what you have until you get it taken away, or you live in Milwaukee by yourself, and you begin to look at the other stuff that's going on in life. And we need to understand that God has given us something special here that we have to keep working at and making it reach its potential. And that's our goal. In the book of Job, we're looking at the different things that we have to deal with, really. And one of the things, the very beginning thing, is the way Satan works. There is a war, and that's an envy war. It isn't a war that he's going to win. So all he wants to do is destroy. And what does he want to destroy? The most important things that are yours to enjoy. Your relationship with God, he wants to destroy that. So he wants you to think you can't have one. He wants you to think God's angry. He wants you to think that you can't approach God. Not true. But that's what he'd like to take away from you, because once you find that out, you'll enjoy being with God. You will. And he wants to take that away. He does not like it when you love people, especially those in your family. Why? Because you will enjoy that a whole lot. That'll be like top drawer. And he's going, "I can't win, so I might as well just make you miserable. I want to take that away. Go take that new car and smash it into a tree. I'll feel good. See, that's how it works. And we dads know that, and you daughters know that, and we're going to help each other. We're going to keep looking for that and not let that spring up. You know, we see that in each other's lives. We're going to say, that envy isn't going to work, Dad. That envy isn't going to work, daughter. I mean, that's not going to work. Because that's a satanic thing. And the second thing is, obviously, Satan wants us to mess up on the whole concept of love. Just not get it. You know, you're going to think love is just because somebody gives you something or somebody says you're pretty or beautiful, whatever. Oh, yeah, they love me. You know, I've said that a horse is pretty, so I don't love a horse. So you got to be careful about the words you use and what you're thinking. You see, Satan would love to mess up the whole concept of love because then everything's messed up. It is a war between God and Satan, and he works through envy, but he would love to mess up in your head what love is, and then 3 out of 4 of your friends probably are going to be messed up on it. They're probably not going to know really God. They're not going to know what to do. It would be very wise for you not to get your advice from people who don't know God, but to get your advice from people who do. You know, I still am mentored in a way, not actively, by the guy who mentored my dad. See, my dad was a kid who came off the streets of Chicago, and his dad was an alcoholic who beat him regularly and left. He didn't have a dad who cared for him. And he was invited once to a church by an older lady, and he went and he became a Christian. And those of you here, you understand that being a Christian, again, is removing that separation between you and God. That's the big deal. And we do that because God allows us to be in his family by sending Jesus and putting our trust in Jesus. And my dad did that at a very young age. And then this guy, Art Rohrheim and Doc Latham, they started the Awana Youth Association. But that was where it started, right there. And those two guys, and my dad was one of those young men that they mentored. And my dad eventually became the first employee for Awana, wrote all their books, and went on, started 2 camps, and was just under these guys. And believe me, he emulated those two guys. They became his dad. Because his dad was never there. His dad was drunk. When he was there, he was beating him up. And when he wasn't there, he didn't know where he was. But somebody took over. To this day, Art, I think, is 96 now. Doc has been dead for a long time. My dad has died. But Art is 96, and he'll still call me. And we still talk. And I can't talk to that man without tears going down his cheeks. I can't let him see my daughters without him crying almost uncontrollably. You know why? That's what he dreamt of when he took this little boy and met with him. Because this little boy didn't have a dad. But now that little boy is in the presence of God with Doc, the senior pastor, and his 2 sons are ministering. And his children, his children's children, his grandchildren are loving God. And to Art, that's important. You see, every once in a while something works. You notice that? It works. But it doesn't work without effort. It doesn't kind of, sort of, happen. It works because you make relationships important. You guys are here this weekend. You made your relationship important, and you came, and I commend you for it. Our relationships need to be intentional and important. I told you earlier, when Linda's home, I want to spend an hour a day walking with her. That's intentional. Why? I communicate better. She knows that. That's what we're going to do. Besides, it doesn't hurt to exercise a little. I mean, those things. You know, when my daughters come up, boom, clear my schedule. When my daughters were young, she's saying, I separate camp, I did. I because I speak a lot at night and I'm here in the morning, I used to take 2 to 3 hours every afternoon and go home and play with them. And I mean play, just play. And then come back. Did I work hard? Yeah, I was putting in 70-hour weeks. But they didn't know it. Because I would just go home and play. When they were young. As they got older, they didn't want to play with me as much. So I didn't do it as much. But I always had that little thing carved out. It's important to understand that we have to be intentional. If we're not intentional, nothing's going to happen. It's nice to say, I want to have a good relationship, you know, for me with my wife or with my kids or with God, and then do nothing about it. And say, boy, I really wanted one, but, you know. That's like somebody going on a diet and I really like to lose weight, but I'm then they don't do anything about it. Or I really want to exercise, but they don't exercise. But yeah, but I really want to. It's like, after a while, you go, no, you don't. I mean, if you really wanted to, you'd be doing something. And no, you don't understand, I really do. I don't think so. If you really want to have a good relationship between father and daughter, work at it. You know, work at it. And you will. You want to have a good relationship with other members of your family, work at it. And you will. In this final point, it's not the 3 out of 4 friends anymore. It's not. We're in the final point, which I think is very important. It's about Job, and God speaks to him in a way, because it's kind of strange when God comes to Job at this point. It seems like Job has already been beat on quite a bit. And then God comes and starts really beating on him. And I thought, this is a tough one. You know, isn't this the guy that did everything right? Why is God upset with him right now? Well, the Bible doesn't say directly why. And whenever I come to a conclusion like that, I'd love to tell you the Bible does not say this, so I'm kind of trying to figure it out. And you can try and figure it out as well. It doesn't say exactly why, but in the context, we can understand, I think, why. You see, what happens after a while, 3 out of 4 of your friends might start wearing on you. They might. I mean, you keep hearing this stuff over and over again. It could start to, you might start to believe it. And what's interesting is that 3 out of 4 of Job's friends were making him sound like, well, you know, you must have done something evil, whatever. No. But then he started to think this, I think, that God was just random and just picked him out and did it. And the interesting thing to me is that Job was okay with that. I mean, he was. He was saying, if God wants to just pick me out of the world and pick on me, he's God. That's fine. And I think that really got God upset. And let me tell you why I think that got God upset. Because now my mind goes through the whole Bible. And I'm trying to understand who God is. And one thing I understand about God is he's not random. In other words, he doesn't do things just to do them. He just doesn't say, oh, I think I'll throw a dart today. And oh, I just blew up a universe. You know, I mean, he doesn't do that. He actually has plans. And one of the worst things we can do is come to God and say, God, you just did something without thinking. You just did something randomly. And then try and be okay with it to show how good we are. You know, I'm okay with it though, God. Even though you're random and you're doing whatever you want, I'm okay with it. See, I would actually commend someone for saying I'm okay with it. But God, for about 3 chapters, he goes after Job. And he says, hey, Job, listen to me now. Job, listen. And here's kind of what he said. Here's some verses from those 3 chapters. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. See, the Lord, as it says on the screen, answered Job out of a whirlwind. And basically, he just came to him and gave it to him. And every answer that God would get would be, I don't know, I don't know. See, he was asking all these questions, saying, Job, certainly you understand. See, what you're doing right now, Job, is pretending to understand something that you do not understand. Now, you might say, well, what do you do with things you don't understand? Say you don't understand them. Look, there's going to be a lot in life you don't understand, really. I mean, figure this one out. God spoke and created the world. How did he do that? I don't know. Just I don't know. But he did. See, he's God. How can God be everywhere at once? I don't know. He is. Okay. You're not going to understand it. See, I don't even understand how to run a soundboard. I'm sure it's all logical and it all works and everything, but there are things that you use every day that you don't understand how they work. I mean, internet. I heard it all go through like Al Gore's basement or something. I don't know. Does it? Where's it all go? Where is this cloud thing out there? I have no idea where this stuff goes. Do I not use it because I don't have an idea? No. I still don't get how television ever got created, where you take a picture and it comes in my screen. I have no idea how that happens. I know those of you that are smart and engineers, you know that, but I don't. But see, what I'm saying is there's a lot in life you're not going to understand. It doesn't mean it's not there. It just means you don't understand it. What happens is, God, if you know who he is, he loves you tremendously, and he's not random. He doesn't just do things for the fun of it. You can trust him. See, he's older than you, he's smarter than you, he loves you, you can trust him. He's not doing something randomly. And I think that's one of the worst things that we can accuse God of doing, is just doing something without thinking about it, randomly, doesn't matter. Because that's not his character. And so for three chapters, he said, where were you when I laid the foundation? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined the measurements? Surely you know. That was sarcastic. Surely you know, Job, because you're telling everybody what's going on here now. You're believing that I'm random. You believe that, and you're fine with it, but see, you're wrong here. On what word's basis sunk, or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy, who shut in the sea with doors when it burst from the womb? When I made the clouds its garment, its thick darkness, its swaddling band, and prescribed its limits for, and set bars and doors, and said, thus far you shall come and no further. Have you commanded the morning since your days began? No, Job, have you ever told the sun to rise? I have. Wow. I imagine Job's going. You know, I think sometimes we want to force an understanding when there is none. It is okay. Faith is actually trusting the character of God, not the circumstances of life. That's the difference. The circumstances can get pretty ugly. They can. I have gone to so many tragedies, like I said before, in my life, because I just know a lot of people. And a lot of times I'll grab a young man I've mentored, maybe something tragic happened, I just grab him, give him a hug, and say, man, this stinks, and I give him a hug. And so I was standing there going, that's not very encouraging. You know what was encouraging? This stinks, and I gave him a hug. See, with eternity in our mind, we understand we live in a fallen world. And there's going to be stuff that happens all the time that stinks. But one day, we win. One day, this is behind us. And that's why we love bringing people into the family and into the kingdom, because we understand that one day, that's their hope right there. We don't have hope in this world. This world is full of sin. It is broken. There are bad things that are going to happen. And even death itself, we weren't made to go through. Death has been the hardest thing for me to deal with. You say, well, you should really be. No, it is. And I don't even want to make it easy. When my dad died, he was my best friend. I that was a tough moment. You know why? Because separation is always tough from those you love. The one thing that bothered Jesus when he was in the garden was that he would be separated from God for a moment. Oh, we think it was the nails and all that. I'm sure he wasn't saying, oh, yay, hit me with nails. I'm sure of that too. But the thing that bothered him was the separation from his father. That's death. See, separation from those you love. Now, I've had a couple instances where I've been in the hospital lane and the doctor has told me it's serious. And I've talked to God about dying. You know what's interesting? I've asked God to let me live, not because I don't mind dying. Actually, I'm tired. But I know that my wife does not want me to die first. I know that. That's been my prayer. God, let her die first, please. Why? Because it's very meaningful to her. See, the idea of separation, that's what kills it right there. And here's the cool part. God says, yeah, that's what sin did, man. That's why I hate sin. But I'm fixing it. I'm fixing it. As soon as this life's over, man, we're not doing that anymore. There will be no more of that. My mom, before she died, she was over about 10 years with various strokes, and just by the time she died, we were thankful. Not for the separation, but for her body. But she told me several things. One of the things she kept saying is, Dave, I keep praying that this piecemeal would stop and I would just come take us all so we don't have to be separated anymore. See, she was separated from her husband when he died. And she knew for a time she'd be separated from her children. didn't like that thought. You see, separation is the great evil. Some people think it's hell. No. It's separation. Oh, hell is real, and it is the permanent separation, and that's the way it is. But see, it's really not just heaven and hell that makes Christianity what it is. It's a relationship with God. See, we don't have arrangements. You ladies do not have an arrangement with your dad. He's your dad. You have a relationship. Not like he's just there to pay bills and do this and do that and everything's cool. No. You have a relationship with him. That's different than an arrangement. Some people want an arrangement with God. I stand up, I sit down, I do this, God's pleased. No. God goes, that's not what we're doing. You need a relationship with me. And by the way, you live in a sinful, fallen world, and I put eternity in your heart, and this is going to always be painful to you every time you're separated. My wife put a picture of myself and the daughter that you saw up there in our bedroom. I think she wants to torture me with it. Because when she was getting on the airplane to go to Honduras, here I am. I believe she should go, and I trust in God. But I'm telling you, we were embracing at the airport. And my daughter couldn't see it, but the tears were just flowing. My wife took a picture. And it's in my bedroom, right by my bed. And I look at that and I see these tears. And I say, God, how come I didn't want her to just go? Oh, I did want her to go. Why? You know what I want to do? I want to get in that bag and go with her. Why, she's my daughter. I didn't want that separation. See, separation. Separation is painful. I don't care how you slice it. It's painful. And you will go through it. All of us will. And that is one of the great reasons why I talk about the love of God and one day getting this whole thing solved. Because one day, I will not say goodbye again. The students up here know, I haven't told this class yet, but they know I have a habit of disappearing on the day they leave. 47 years of saying goodbye. I don't want to do it again. You see, you're a big baby. I am. I don't want to say goodbye anymore. You know, and it's my way of running from it. You know, I don't want to do it. And I've had some trace me down because they know I'm playing a game with them. They'll find me before they leave. And they're like, you dog. You know, and they'll say goodbye, and I won't say it. I'll say, see you later, man. The hardest thing of working in a ministry like this is that people come and go. They come in, you get to know them, and they leave. Come in, they get to know them, and they leave. Why don't I just say, forget it, I don't care? Because you can't. Separation is what's tough. It is. When you start a relationship, separation after that is tough. I don't care how you slice it. It's important for us to understand that. What Job was accusing God of was just, oh, I'm just playing with you, Job. I don't really care. I'm just doing what I feel like. And God got upset. There's no random here, God. I mean, Job, no random. And after three chapters, he comes to him, obviously, and he says, you listen to me. And he asks him this question. Who is it that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Who is it that's getting you to think wrong, Job? Isn't that an interesting question? He's giving Job an out here. Who are you going to blame for this, Job? You're wrong thinking. Who are you going to blame? You know, if that was Dave Wager, I'd be going, my three bum friends, why don't I stand back while you hit them with lightning? You know what I mean? It's their fault, not mine. I think bad because of them. Really, when you look at it, it's extremely interesting. Then Job answered. But he answered in a very unique way. In the 42nd chapter, the first verse, then Job answered the Lord and said, I know that you can do all things, and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. I know this about you, God. It's always good when you're confused, by the way, is to go back to a baseline and say the things that you know for sure. My mom had a stroke. My dad had died. Some of the churches I worked with as a young man were falling apart. And my mom, I got a call one morning. I was off that morning. I was called. My mom was working in the kitchen up here, and it was obvious she had a stroke. And so I came in, and I took care of her and got her in an ambulance and was following the ambulance into the hospital, not knowing if I'd ever see her again. I just lost my dad quickly. Everything seemed to be falling apart. And I'm following that ambulance in. And if you know my personality, I'm gripping the wheel, and I'm one angry person at this point. And who am I angry with? I'm angry with God right now. Why? I'm saying, God, you didn't have to do this. You know, what am I doing? I'm playing Job here. Random, pick my mom out, huh? I'm mad at you now. No, you know, I'm not thinking clearly at this moment. My wife, Linda, sitting next to me, she sees me angry. And she looks over at me and she says, Dave, I think you need to listen to yourself. I think you need to remind yourself of what you know right now instead of what you feel. Yeah, I got about that silent in the car. And I said, okay. And I started repeating the things I knew. God, you're not random. God, you love my mom. God, I know that you love me. You know what happened? My grip loosened up. I was fine by the time I got to the hospital. Why? I started with the baseline. Satan loves getting us off that. I mean, he loves getting us into all these other things. What if, maybes, look what happened, poor me, all that stuff. He loves getting us there. I had to go back to the simple. There is a God, I'm not him. He does love me, I know that. He does love. All of a sudden I'm fine, I'm in the hospital, I'm actually joking with the nurses back to myself, even though my mom is sick. I wasn't flipping, I just got put back into focus. What Job was doing here was going back to a baseline. When you have stuff happen in your life, do you have a baseline? Do you know what you can say? Do you know what you believe? If not, I would get one. And don't make it up, by the way. This isn't time to make something up that isn't right. Baseline has to be just truth. It's truth that destroys Satan and his attempts. That's it. Truth. That's really it. And Job answered, I know you can do all things. No purpose of you can be thwarted. Boom, baseline. See, no matter what he was thinking before that, and it's easy to get off base, he went back to the baseline. I know you're God, and you're powerful, you can do everything. And he says, who is this that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore, he asked, who is this that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore, I have uttered what I did not understand, things too wonderful for me to know. Hear, and I will speak. I will question you, and you will make it known to me. Verse 5 of chapter 42. I had heard of you by hearing of the ear, but now my eyes see you. Therefore, I despise myself and repent in dust and ashes. This is very interesting. He had a chance to blame his three bum friends, but he didn't. He took responsibility for what he believed. He took personal responsibility for it. And God said, thank you. And then God took care of the three friends, gave them 10 more kids, which is actually double. He gave them double everything. He had 14,000 sheep when this thing was done. He gave them 10 more kids. They said he didn't have double. Yes, he did. Eternity-minded, his 10 kids went before him there in heaven. He's going to see him again. Now he had 20. And he had double everything. It's amazing how God knows when to let up the pressure, believe me. How much can somebody take? God knows. He's promised never to put you in a position where you have more than you can take. So when you're in a position where you go, I can't take anymore, you just call God a liar. Because he's not going to do that. Oh, you may not want to be where you're at, I understand that. But he will never give you as your father more than you can him bear. You know, I've made the mistake with my daughter of giving her more than she could bear. This younger one especially, she would let me experiment more. So my older one would just roll her eyes at me and not let me do that. But the younger one, you know how I taught her to ski? Remember, just put the skis on, let's go. I taught her to drive the same way. You know, we were actually dropping her sister off at college, and we were in Minneapolis, and I thought, she hasn't even driven yet, but she drove a golf cart a lot. And I thought, oh, you got your permit? Let's go. Get behind the wheel. And Lindsay went, what are you doing? Well, I'm going to have her drive. We're getting on a highway here. Ah, she got to learn sometime. I mean, very first time she gets in a car, we're getting on a highway in Minneapolis. I mean, it's like, she was just scared spitless. That lasted about, 30 seconds before. Then I said, pull the car over. What are you doing? I'm teaching her how to drive. It's like, is this how you learn to drive? Pretty much. My dad got us to drive, and I drove. I mean, that's pretty much how it happened. And it's like, forget it. So she took over from that point on the driving. But it was, she'll laugh about it to this day, too. It's like, Dad, really? Yeah, we make mistakes sometimes, don't we? It's not that I just thought, this is a good experience. When are you going to learn how to get on a highway? Well, how about if I learn where the brake is, first? Well, you knew that. You have a golf cart. I mean, you got all the basics. You've crashed my golf cart several times, so you must know it. It's interesting. We look at this position, and what happened here is that Job understood, I am responsible for what I believe. You know what? Girls, you may have friends at school and stuff, and you may say, I believe it because of this. No, you are responsible for what you believe. And one day, everybody will be stripped away from you, and you will stand alone before God. That's where you want to give a right answer. Be responsible. Believe what's right. And when you're wrong at something, you need to say, I'm wrong. Dads, same thing. I have actually had young people tell me that they've never heard their dad tell them that they were wrong. They've never heard them say, I was wrong, I need to learn more. They've never heard them do that. How in the world are they supposed to learn how to do that if we don't show them how? We need to be transparent on that one. I was wrong here, I need to change, we're going to do something different. Each time in those cases with Sarah, I had to go, yeah, I think I was wrong on teaching how to ski that way. Maybe we need to let mom teach you. And she was going to go, or maybe you need to learn how to teach. Well, there are a couple options, but I think mom would be better at this than I am. And she would smile, and she would agree. You see, I don't know what's going to happen someday, but I can picture someday maybe people standing before God. And I'm not just a heaven and hell. I mean, I believe heaven, I believe hell, but I think Christianity is a relationship, and so I hate just using those two examples. But I think if you had somebody standing and before God one day, and God would say, why should I let you in heaven forever? And they said, well, because I did everything this way and this way and this way. And God would say, where'd you learn that? My great-grandma said it's the way it is. And then God looks at him and says, your great-grandma was wrong. Now where are you? You don't have anything left. You see, you and I are personally responsible for what we believe. Just because you believe something does not make it true. Truth stands by itself, whether you believe it or not. What I need to do is find out what it is and then set my beliefs to truth. So I want to invite each of you to understand that this personal responsibility thing is very, very big. If something's not going right in your life, I have had so many issues. Several years ago, diagnosed with a heart attack and then the blood clots in my lungs and narcolepsy. And I've been on this journey. I was in a wheelchair, as I told you, when I was a kid. And I used to be, if I would run from here to that back wall, I would not be able to walk for about a week because I would limp because of the pain right now as I get older. But what's happened over the last 5 or 6 years is that I quit saying things like, yeah, I was a crippled kid, and I can't help it. I started saying things like, I am responsible for how I live. And I went and I researched and I met with doctors and I've done all kinds of things to learn how to eat differently and live differently and take responsibility for who I am. Do you know that today my goal, and this sounds simple to some of you that are really in good shape, but my goal is by the end of the year is to be able to run a half hour again, and I'm up to 25 minutes without pain. And I've had to learn to eat different. I remember I was sitting my first heart attack, and I'm sitting, my only one, and sitting with the doctor, and he said, well, you need to lose some weight, and you need to exercise more. And, of course, what I heard was, you're chubby, And I'm thinking, So I remember going back, and my father-in-law is a doctor, and I was talking to him, and I've had conversations with him. He's honest, and we're eating something, and I said, I don't know, man, I'm just hungry all the time, and I don't know why I can't lose weight. And I remember my father-in-law, who's a doctor, just looked at me and goes, you eat too much. And I thought, well, don't hold back, you know. And I thought for a minute, wait, that doctor said it, my father-in-law said it. I wonder if that's true. Do you know how hard it was for me to go, I eat too much? I don't want to say that. Why? I was blaming it on my genetics. I was blaming it on my hip. I was blaming it on my metabolism has slowed down. It's not me. You know what's interesting? Right now, my blood work is just ideal. I can run again, I can do things, and it's because I had to say one day, I am the cause of my problems, not anything else. And if I am, I need to do something different. I hope that you dads and daughters just thoroughly enjoy each other. And if you haven't had the relationship you should, say it to each other and get it right. Let's get it right. Let's do something different. Let's be the dads and daughters examples for the world. Let there be a dad and daughter example in you. You know, I guess I wanted to show you that just because I want to be a dad and daughter example. I want young ladies to see my daughter and be hopeful that they can make it. I want to be a dad that encourages dads. You can do this. See, I'm in the other side of this now. I'm getting older. Job took personal responsibility. We need to. Let me just wrap up some things here. I think that if I were to encourage you to take personal responsibility, at least in two areas, it would be the two areas we started with, the baseline. The first is, do you really love God? I promise you this. If you're disappointed in God, you don't know Him. If you're angry with God, you don't know Him. You need to spend time getting to know Him. The most important decision I made years ago was to read the Bible through every year. And now that's been about 30 years, and I've done it at least once a year, and it's the most important thing I've ever done. Why? It gives me an understanding of God and who He is. You need to know Him, and then you need to spend time with Him and love Him, and then you trust Him. I am not disappointed in God and things He has done. I am not angry with God. And there are times where I go to God, I don't understand it, and because of Job, I can let it go. Because I know who's taking it. You are personally responsible. If you're not spending time with God, if you're spending the average 3.2 hours on Facebook and not with God, not working. That's not going to work. You need to be spending time. If you want a relationship with anyone, you got to spend time with them. I have to spend time with Linda. I spend time with my daughters. And you know what? You need to cherish that time. My daughters and I now have to fight for time because they don't live at home anymore. Enjoy the fact that you live at home right now. And enjoy the relationships that are there. Very important. The second thing is that, love people. And how does that start? Well, it starts with your personal responsibility to love your family. Mom, dad, brothers, sisters. Then it goes to your friends, our nation, our world. See, I need to be personally responsible to love God, love people, trust Him. Satan's trying to get you through envy. He is. He's trying to mess up your concept of love. He's trying to get you to think that you're all alone, that 3 out of 4 of your friends are right, the majority's right for some reason, when they're just the majority. And he's trying to get you to fluff off this personal responsibility thing. You can't help yourself. That's the way you are. Don't buy it. And as dads and daughters, I'm asking you to hold each other accountable to those things. You know those points. Those are baseline points. You can talk about it. You were here. Let's make sure that doesn't grab us and destroy us. Let's pray. Father, again, thank you for your love and for your mercy, for your time together. Thank you for the food we're about to eat over in the dining hall. I pray you give safe travel home today. In Jesus' name, amen. If you do want any of those books, they're back there. I do not have a price on them. I just tell you I got to pay for them, so whatever you want to pay for them is fine with me. And hopefully at the end I'll be able to pay my bills. So those are back there. HopeNet stuff is back there. Help yourself to that. I will leave that there, and there's an envelope if you do want to put some money in for the books, and I'll just take that away later. So if you want to go eat now, because they're probably waiting for us, and come back and look at those books before you leave, I'll leave them there till later this afternoon. So, thank you.